All right, the next case is Chase Colwell Darley against the Commonwealth, Mr. Massoni, Ms. Brittany Dunferio. Mr. Massoni, how are you today?
I'm doing well. Good afternoon, Your Honor. I have just a clock to make sure. My name is Eric Massoni from the Chesapeake Public Defender's Office. I represent Chase Darley in this case.
Would you care to reserve any rebuttal time?
Yes, Your Honor, thank you. I would like to reserve 5 minutes.
Okay, we're glad to hear from you then.
Okay. This is a factually complicated case, but I think the issue in the case is relatively straightforward. Essentially, the issue is whether the Commonwealth established that Mr. Darley was the one that actually committed the theft in this case, or if he was simply somebody who had been present in the house around the time the theft had occurred. Mr. Darley was charged with grand larceny of stealing four items. He was charged with stealing a watch, $400 in U.S. currency.
We're familiar with the facts, Mr. Massoni. Let me cut to the chase here. It seems to be the basis for the Commonwealth circumstantial evidence here is your client's fingerprint on I can't remember if it was a jewelry box or a watch box.
Watch box, yes, Your Honor.
It had been located inside of a dresser. It was subsequently moved and found empty. There was some evidence in the case that your client had been in the home earlier on a different date, apparently close in time, but on a different date. To do some work in that very room, and but I think the homeowner was present during that occasion and testified that didn't see your client touch the watch box. In fact, the watch box was not openly on the dresser at that time. So, given all of that, why is it an unreasonable conclusion for a fact finder to determine that if your client had been in the room before, the watch box wasn't displayed then, that on another occasion when he was alone, he went in that room and removed it from the drawer?
And I think if the homeowner's testimony was quite that clear, I would agree this would be pretty much an impossible hurdle to overcome. Reviewing the transcript, my recollection of his testimony is he said he was present in the room when Mr. Darley was in there previously, and he didn't. I don't recall him.
He said he didn't see him.
He didn't see him one
way.
But
he also testified that that box was not on the dresser at the time. It was in the dresser.
I don't think the testimony at that occasion said where the box was. I don't think it was accounted for at all. The witness, Mr. Azadog, did testify that he couldn't account for that box on all occasions, that occasionally it may have been on top of the dresser. He didn't specify about that occasion, but he did say the items inside the dresser could previously have been on top of the dresser instead. And on that occasion, the testimony was that Mr. Darley would have put his tools on top of that dresser as well when he had gone into the room. And that's the reason why there's an alternate explanation for where this fingerprint came from.
But doesn't that alternate explanation depend on a lot of speculation?
Certainly, I think the court would have to speculate one way or the other about when that fingerprint came, because there was no way to actually narrow down when it arrived on that box. Certainly, the evidence was that they can't say when that fingerprint arrived, how recent or how long ago it was. The testimony was simply unaccounted for one way or the other as far as the watch box goes. It is worth noting, of course, that the witness, Mr. Azadog, believed that a watch was inside the watch box, and Mr. Darley was actually found not guilty of stealing the watch itself. He was found guilty of stealing two cell phones that were found on top of the dresser, as well as two DVD players that were found in a kitchen far removed from the dresser entirely. I do agree with the court that
I gather the acquittal on the theft of the contents of the watch box was based on the failure of the homeowner to be able to testify that the actual watch was in the box at the time.
Yes, I think that's the best reading. I think the arguments for acquittal on the grand larceny, I think there were several different theories. Reading the trial court's ruling, I think that's probably the most plausible theory of the reason. Also, there was an argument made it was no permission, for example. But yes, it is possible the watch wasn't in the watch box, which of course then raises the question, if the Commonwealth's theory is he went, picked up this watch box, moved it into the bathroom, for what purpose would that have been done? There's no other evidence whatsoever as far as him having any of the actual property. testimony was that Mr. Darley had been inside the residence on many occasions before for this same type of scenario where he fixed the air conditioning. He'd been in the bedroom before, but never unsupervised. And in this case, the time he was on account, the time where the house was unlocked was from 7 p.m. till 10:30 p.m., so it was a period of time where anyone could have gone in and taken the property for which Mr. Darley was convicted.
Except for counsel, we don't look at these in isolation. It's sort of, you know, the circumstances altogether. So it's the fact that you've got the opportunity where there's a three-hour period, he's alone, the discussion about the fact that the watch box, according to the owner, was not something he had access to, even though he couldn't definitively say that. The fact that it was in a drawer, which would not be on top of the dresser where he might ordinarily put tools. So is that really how we have to look at it?
Yes, of course. It has to be determined by the totality of the circumstances. But the totality of the circumstances in this case is an opportunity to commit the theft when other individuals could have had an opportunity as well.
But there's no evidence of any other access to the home.
Right? No, that's correct, Your Honor. The only other evidence, once again, it's opportunity and a fingerprint, and that's it. And given the fact that there's at least an alternate explanation that was not concluded for where that fingerprint came from, I would submit that certainly it was suspicious. It could raise the level of probability of guilt, but as far as whether the Commonwealth proved it beyond a reasonable doubt, I would submit that they did not raise it to that level.
All right. Anything else?
No, Your Honor. Thank you.
All right. Then you have plenty of time in rebuttal.
Yes, sir.
May it please the Court, Brittany D'Imperio for the Commonwealth. At this juncture, the standard of review is whether any rational trier of fact could have found the essential elements of the crime beyond a reasonable doubt. And we have
in that vein, though, part of the Commonwealth's burden here is to remove every reasonable hypothesis consistent with innocence. So given, I mean, this is a pretty close case, if you ask me, in terms of circumstantial evidence. I mean, the house is wide open. Anybody can walk in on this particular occasion. The defendant obviously has been there on at least one other occasion. He's got a reason for being there. But the big deal, it seems to me, is the fingerprint. But he was acquitted of the theft of the contents of that box. So, and nobody's raising a collateral estoppel issue here. But it seems to me that at least is a significant fact that we have to also consider.
So in this case, when you take all of the facts and reasonable inferences in light most favorable to the Commonwealth, it becomes clear that...
How has every reasonable hypothesis of innocence been removed?
Okay.
Here?
So the first hypothesis of innocence that was presented was that Darley had placed his fingerprint on the watch box on a previous occasion. But the testimony of the victim establishes that that was not possible.
Didn't the victim also indicate that the watch box was not always kept in the drawer?
So, not exactly. The victim testified that it was in the drawer on the day it happened and that it was kept inside the dresser drawer generally, but that
not,
when
not
she...
Not on the day that it happened, but because the appellant had been there on prior occasions. And didn't the victim indicate that he couldn't definitively say that it was always in the drawer?
So he testified that he could not definitively say if it was always in the drawer when he was not at home, when he was at work, and because his wife was the boss of the house, and so she could definitively say that. But the only previous occasion that Darley had
looking at the joint appendix from pages 36 and 37, this is following up on Judge Rose's question. This is the earlier occasion when he's in there. He's in the room with the permission of the owner, who's present as well. I don't see on those pages where the owner testified as to where the watch box was on that occasion. Maybe you can point to something I missed.
I know in the record, the victim did testify that it was kept in the dresser drawer. And he did testify.
He said that was where it was normally kept.
That was normally
kept.
And
I think in fairness, he also said that on other occasions it was not necessarily in there. It was out on...
From my reading of the transcript, he said that when he was not home because he worked for long periods of time, he could not say where items in the house were because he just wasn't there. But I did not get the impression that that meant that when he was home, it wasn't in the dresser drawer.
Let's just cut right down to it then. To remove every hypothesis consistent with innocence, would not the Commonwealth have to establish that on the occasion that the defendant was in that room with his tools, working on that thermostat that's in that room, putting his tools on the dresser, that box was not on the, that box was in the dresser and not on the dresser at that time? And if that's the case, then where's the evidence that was the case?
No, I don't think that the Commonwealth did have to establish that the box was not on the dresser, because the defendant, or not the defendant, the victim never testified that.
Well, if the box is on the dresser, isn't it a reasonable hypothesis that when he put his tools there, he moved the box and that's how his fingerprint got on the box?
And that could have happened, and that was for the trial court to decide that, and at this point,
Wouldn't the Commonwealth have to remove that hypothesis of innocence by somehow establishing that the box was not there at that time? Had the homeowner said, "I'm sorry, I was there with him, the box wasn't there," when he was working on that thermostat and I was standing there watching him do it. If the homeowner had testified to that, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now. But that I don't read this record as that being the evidence in the case. And if the homeowner, at least opens up the possibility that the box is on that dresser at the point in time when the defendant is in there working on the thermostat with the homeowner's permission, and has to move that box to put his tools there, then that's a hypothesis that's consistent with innocence, isn't it?
That would be a hypothesis that would be consistent
with. And so the Commonwealth has to remove that hypothesis. Show me where that was done.
I think on page 40 of the appendix, the victim was asked, can you say that it was always kept, the watchbox was always kept inside the dresser? Can you testify that it has always been kept inside the dresser? And he said that he couldn't because he was only home 6 hours a day in a 24-hour period. So to me, that implies that when he is not at home, he doesn't know, but that when he is at home, he does know that it is kept inside the dresser drawer.
There was no testimony, affirmative testimony, that the box was kept on top of the dresser, was there?
No, there is no.
Nobody said that. But what you have is some, customarily or generally, the box is not on top of the, that's what all you have.
Yes.
But you can't discount it because it's not, because it's, it's limited, can you?
Cannot.
It's part of the hypothesis of innocence that is being viewed at, but it's also part of the guilt that can be viewed, even though it's only usually kept inside the drawer. You can't discount it just because it's only usually kept there, can you?
No,
I mean,
isn't
that what
so.
You're saying?
Yes, that is what I'm trying to say.
That just because it's not always kept there, you can't discount the rest of the testimony, which is, yeah, but that's normally where we keep it. Could
yes.
be weighed anyway.
Yes.
It's not definitive. But I have another question about where the items were that I can't answer. Is the location of the items that were stolen of any importance here?
Yes.
Because, if someone came in a completely open house to the world, it seems interesting to me that the only items stolen were in those two locations, one of which the defendant was in for sure. But I don't know about the other, which was the kitchen, was it not?
Yes.
Okay. Is there any evidence about whether the defendant clearly was in the kitchen at some point? Other than he must have been there, it's a kitchen.
No, there's no evidence in the record that the defendant was in the kitchen. I don't have the layout of
the house.
And the
items were cell phone and something else?
Several cell phones were stolen from on top of the dresser, which was where the watch box was inside. And then also, it was two, I believe it was two or three DVD players were stolen from the kitchen as well.
Okay, anything else?
So I think everyone agrees that Darley did have the opportunity to commit the crime. He knew the back door of the house was unlocked. He knew the victims were out. And
he certainly had the opportunity. The question is whether he was the only one with the opportunity, I guess.
Right. But there's nothing in the record at all that can support the finding that someone else went into the house during that approximately three-hour time period.
Well, but if you have a door that's wide open, you know, unlocked, and anybody can walk in all day, you know, at any point all day long, you have evidence that one person did so. Does that exclude the possibility that no one else did?
No, it doesn't exclude that possibility, but it makes it highly unlikely for someone else to have gone.
Why? Explain that to me.
Because
I don't
we had
that.
Somebody who was working on a compressor for an HVAC system that arrived shortly after the victims left the house to go to dinner. And so we had somebody who was, Darley was in the house during that time period.
But it seems to me it was a fairly large window, wasn't it?
It was about a three-hour time period. But no one else had their fingerprints on a watch box was inside
true.
Of a dresser
That's
drawer.
True. And again, depending on where that watch box was, that might be enough to satisfy the standard here. But
And Darley did not have permission to even be in the bedroom at all to work on this. There was no thermostat in the bedroom that he needed to turn off. The thermostat was in the hallway.
Which is where in the house? Near the kitchen? Was it near the kitchen?
I don't know if it was near the kitchen. In between, I think, the bedroom and the bathroom.
So I don't know.
Doesn't the Commonwealth's case here depend upon the fact finder reaching the following conclusions? Number one, the defendant was the only person likely to have entered the house during this three-hour window when the door is wide open and anybody could have gone in there. Number two, that even though the work that took him there didn't take him into that particular bedroom, he must have gone into that bedroom and stolen whatever he could from in or on or around or whatever that dresser, because he had been there on an earlier occasion and presumably, I guess, knew that something valuable might be in or on or in the dresser or its contents. And the fact that the fingerprint was there on this prior occasion must have been put there the second time he arrived, not the first time, because there's no evidence he ever touched the box the first time around because nobody actually saw him do it. Isn't that a lot of speculation that the Commonwealth's case here has to depend on?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because there's no testimony that he did touch a watch box on top of the dresser drawer.
Testimony that he couldn't have either.
Right, but I thought that the victim was clear that it was typically, usually, always, to his knowledge, kept in the dresser drawer.
Well,
and only when he wasn't home he couldn't specify because he didn't know where the belongings are when he wasn't home.
But the homeowner never used the term always, as you just did.
That's where it was kept. Was where it was kept.
That's a normal location.
Yes.
But not exclusive, apparently.
He couldn't say when he wasn't home. But the day the defendant did come into the house to do the work on the vent on the ceiling, the victim was home, and the victim did observe him on that day. And because the victim was home, and
Couldn't the Commonwealth have simply asked him the question? I know you weren't the prosecutor, but couldn't the prosecutor simply said, was or was not the box on the dresser when he was in the home working on that thermostat?
The Commonwealth certainly could have asked that question, Your Honor. That's correct.
So they did not, basically, the only exclusion is an implication here. Is that right? The only exclusion of that theory of innocence is through implication.
I think that the fact finder looked at the evidence, and in the light most favorable to the Commonwealth, it established that when the victim was home, the watch box was inside the dresser drawer. But even if the watch box was kept on top of the dresser, which I'm not saying it was, it still got moved and was taken to the bathroom, and it still had no reason to have been moved at all. So that's just another fact to consider.
You were starting to talk about the fact that the defendant knew that the house was open.
Yes.
And knew that the owners would not be home. Did he not also know the period of time when the owners were going to be gone? Wasn't there some telephoning alerting the owners as to the presence of the defendant?
Yeah, so they did communicate with each other. The victim called or texted the defendant to let him know that the back door was unlocked and that they'd be out for a family dinner that evening. And then the defendant replied that he was on his way and would be there in like 5 to 10 minutes.
Is there any distinction to be drawn in terms of the inferences to the Commonwealth that the door is unlocked rather than open? How and what significance could that have?
Well, so this was a back door that was unlocked, and so I mean, typically people don't go around houses trying to open back doors. And so I think that's important because he knew that the house was left unlocked for him. But it's not as if the front door was wide open, so anyone could have just like wandered in and knew it would have been unlocked. Somebody would have still had to have approached the house in the back and tried the door.
Right.
If there are no further questions, I ask that this court affirm.
I think we beat you up enough for one. Ms. Bassoni?
Yes, Your Honor. I don't have much else to add, Your Honor. I'm, of course, obviously familiar with all the arguments and facts. The only thing I just want to emphasize is it is possible to imagine simple questions that could have been asked that would have closed the circle and would have left me nothing to argue. When Mr. Darley was in there previously, was the watchbox on top of the dresser? Would have been a question the Commonwealth could have asked, did not establish. What time frame did Mr. Darley's text establish that he was in the home? If Mr. Darley was in the home from 7 p.m. until 10:30, there would have been no opportunity for anyone else to be in the home. Those are two that I just think of off the top of my head. None of those questions were asked, which leaves the Commonwealth with reasonable theories of innocence that were not, as proven beyond a reasonable doubt, to not have existed. So I would ask the court to reverse the case and dismiss the charge.
Thank you, Ms. Bassoni. We will come down and greet counsel and take up the last case of the day, which is Todd Patrick Weathersby against the Commonwealth.